Okay, so we are holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis 10 lines from the bottom. The line begins Yosef Datai. We left off in the middle of the story of Rav Shimon ben Yechaya. Okay, so we're getting started now, so you're in good time. Good. Hi, everyone. Okay, so let's get started then. We're holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis 10 lines from the bottom. Lamed Gimel Yosef Datayu. We left off in the middle of the story of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. We said that Rav Shimon ben Yochai had said derogatory things about the Romans. They wanted to kill him, so he and Rav Elazar, his son, ran away, and eventually we said they wound up spending 13 years in the cave. So, Shomer Rav Pinchas ben Yor Chasne. Rav Pinchas ben Yor, who was Rav Shimon ben Yochai's son-in-law, heard that Rav Shimon was back and had come out of the cave, the Nafak La'afe, and he came out to greet him. Now, all Gemara is saying that Rav Pinchas ben Yor was Rav Shimon ben Yochai's son-in-law. It's interesting, the Zohar actually presents Rav Pinchas ben Yor as Rav Shimon ben Yochai's father-in-law, and that leads a number of the Mefarshim, and that leads a number of the Achronim to correct all Gemara, to be Magia all Gemara, and say instead of Chasne, to say Choisne, that it was his father-in-law. Anyway, so he came out to greet him. I was a babe bunny, so he took him into the bathhouse to wash off after all this time. And the Pinchas ben Yor was massaging and smoothing out Rav Shimon's skin in the bathhouse. He saw that Rav Shimon had cracks and cracks in his skin from places where, because all those years we said before that Rav Shimon and Rav Elazar had spent large amounts of time buried in sand up to their necks when they were learning Torah. We said only when they were davening or saying Krishna or Tosfos, whatever, would they get out of there and put on their clothes. So all those years of spending buried in the sand over there caused the cracks to form in their skin. So the Pinchas noticed how bad off Rav Shimon looked, that there's cracks all over the place in his skin. Have a kabochi. So Rav Pinchas ben Yor was crying about that. The Konosu Dimas Eme, so the tears from his eyes are falling in some places on Rav Shimon's skin, become a tzavach. It's causing him to cry out. Because as it is, it hurt enough. But when you have salty tears fall on exposed skin, then it makes it on cracked skin, then it makes it worse. I guess as soon as he realized, he stopped crying, or Rav Shimon moved a little further away. Anyway, this, by the way, that we're saying, if we're saying that Rav Pinchas ben Yor is Rav Shimon's son-in-law or father-in-law, actually, a number of Mefarshim point out that creates a problem because you have a Gemara in Pesachim that says that a son-in-law shouldn't bathe together with his father-in-law. So he was bathing. Well, that's what we're saying. We're in the bathhouse. So if we're saying, as all Gemara has it, that Rav Pinchas is the son-in-law, then it creates a problem. If you say, as the Zohar says, that Rav Pinchas is actually the father-in-law, then it's not such a problem, because you could say Rav Shimon is the one bathing. He's the one whose skin is exposed, obviously, as we're saying in the Gemara over here. But Rav Pinchas may have stayed dressed in order, and that way there's no issue. Anyway, so Rav Pinchas says to Rav Shimon, woe to me that I have to see you in a situation like this where you're in such poor health after being all those years hiding away. Rav Shimon says just the opposite. You should consider yourself happy and fortunate that you saw me in the condition that I am now, because he became so much greater during all those years in the cave. And we see that. And it continues, if you did not see me in this state of what I'm like after I came out of the cave, you wouldn't have found that I now have the advantages that you're now seeing. What was the advantage? The Me'ikra, originally, you have a Makhtri of Shimon ben Yochai Pusha. Originally, the situation was that when Rav Shimon ben Yochai would ask a question in Torah, have Mufadis later Pinchas Banir Trait Tapiruki. Rabbi Pinchas Banir would be able to answer the question in 12 different answers. Was first, but now after the Shimon came out of the cave and he's on a such high, on a, so much of a higher level, he have a maxi of Pinchas Banir Kusha, then it would be the other way around. Rabbi Pinchas Banir asked the question, have a Mufadis later Shimon Yechoi Esrim Rabbah Piruki. Rabbi Shimon Yechoi would now be able to answer Rabbi Pinchas Banir 24 different ways. So first of all, things are flipped around, where before Pinchas Ben Yair was able to answer Reb Shimon's questions, and now it's the other way around. Reb Shimon is able to answer Reb Pinchas' questions, and not only is able to answer them, but with twice as many answers as Reb Pinchas Ben Yair was able to before to his own questions. So we see how much greater Reb Shimon became in Torah from all those years spent studying in the cave. This is where, by the way, that Alter Rebbe points out in Igeret HaKodesh and Tanya, in Siman Chav Vav, you see from this that the most of the time that Rav Shimon was in the cave, he and Rav Elazar must have spent learning Nigla. And that's why now, when he comes out, that's why now he has this tremendous advantage in Nigla over a Pinchas Ben Yair. Okay. Omar, so now Rav Shimon says...
It's a bit paradoxical. We're not used to hearing that Reb Shimon was a Baki in Nigle. We tend to think that he was a Baki in Pnimius.
Now we understand that he was actually. Now it is true that when it is true that more often than not, when we have a machlokas between Reb Shimon and the other Chachamim, more often than not, the halacha is not like Reb Shimon. But why that is, that's a different question. But right. With all the Chachamim in general, I mean, we only know a tiny little bit of their greatness, as much as we have about them in the Gemara and in the Mishnah and the Gemara and Midrashim and whatever, we always have to realize that everything we know about them and everything we know about what they said is only a tiny fraction of what they really were. And we have actually an example in this Gemara over here. When we're talking about these 12 answers and these 24 answers, and you have other similar Gemaras, you have, for example, I'll give you another example. You have a Gemara in Yevamos, for example, that talks about the whole question in the first paragraph of Yevamos that talks about the question, do you do Yibum or Chalitza with the tzara of a woman who is your relative? Chamesh Esrei Nashim Poitras Torah Sein. You have the whole thing over there. So the Gemara there discusses two reasons why the Shammai might hold what they hold and the Bishilah hold what they hold. Meanwhile, you have a Gemara there that tells a story, which in the course of the story we find out that one of the Chachamim, the brother of Rav Yosef and Harkinas, knew 300 reasons for Bishamai's Shita. So we see, we only have two of the reasons in the Gemara, but we see that there are hundreds of reasons and more that we don't have. So the same thing over here, yeah. Right? We have, for example, 24 answers that Rav Shimon now is giving for everything Rav Pinchas Ben Yair is asking, but we don't know what the questions were and we don't know what the answers were. We're missing a tremendous amount.
And if he was learning Gemara all that time when he was in the cave, when did he have the Chochmah to write the Zohar? He wrote it in a cave or he wrote it after he came out?
Well, it may be that he composed it orally in the cave and then wrote it. The Pashtus, it would have to be he would composed it orally in the cave and then wrote it down later. I mean, then it had pen and paper in the cave, you know. But whatever it is, the point is, Alter Rebbe makes the point in that Igeres over there. Let's go on. We do need to go on. But Alter Rebbe makes the point in that Igeres over there that, look, if it was just a matter of composing the Zohar, the whole Zohar only has at most a couple of months' worth of material. They were in the cave for 13 years. So of necessity, most of their time must have been spent learning the 600 or 700 orders of the Mishnah that existed in Rav Shimon's times.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's go on. Omar, so Rav Shimon says to himself, Hoyol v'Isrichish Nisa, since a nest happened to me and I was saved all those years, Ezel Asakin Milka. Let me go and do something like Yaakov did when he was saved from Esav, and he went and made something new and made improvements for the city that he came to. The same way, let me make improvements for the city where I'm in now. Yichtiv, as the pasuk says, one reason the Poshim say, Ben Yahyada and others, that we said before that when a nest is done for a person, it may cause his chosim to be reduced. But like this, if he does a kindness for other people, then like he's doing it for free. He's not asking them to pay them for it. So that may cause that midah keneged midah, Hashem will now have done the nest for him for free and not deduct from his chosen for it. So where do we see that type of thing, that you're supposed to do such a thing? The pasuk says, "Vayava Yaakov Shalem." The pasuk says, "Yaakov came complete to Shechem." What does it mean, complete? It means that Yaakov was complete in his body, because before that he was limping after the fight with the Malach, but now he was healed from that. Sholem b'mamono, he was complete with all of his possessions, because even though he had to give that huge gift to Esav at the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, nevertheless, it was made up, it was more than made up for by this time. And Sholem b'Torah, and he was complete in his Torah, that all the trouble and pressure of the journey and of all the years in Laban's house, he hadn't forgotten his Torah. So that was all a nest, that he had been not only saved from Esav, but that he had everything that he should have complete. And the pasuk continues, by Yichan es pnei ha'ir. He camped by the face of the city of Shechem. So what does that mean? So first of all, the Gemara is bothered by that. First it says that he came to the city of Shechem. Now it's saying he camped in front of the city. So what is it? Did he go into the city, or did he just camp in front of it? Also, the word by Yichan, the Gemara is understanding, can be Meloshin Chaim, that he did something graceful and kind for them. And Pnei Ha'ir can also mean that, like, he gave the city a new face, he gave it an upgrade. So what did he do? Amar Rav, Machdeya Tikkun Lahem. So Rav says he set up for them coinage. So some of them, the first should say, in other words, up until that point, first they were doing the barter system. I have a cow, you have grain, let's say, so let's trade one for the other. And Yaakov set up that now they have an actual monetary system. Another way of looking at it is there existed coins before that. I think Ben Yehoyada says there existed coins before that, but the city of Shechem themselves did not have a coinage. He set up a coinage for them, which is a very important thing. It shows, like, now they're upgraded in status, that they're an important enough city to be issuing coins of their own. Shmuel says that he set up some marketplaces. Rashi also explains that you also have to have, first of all, again, by Yichan es pnei ha'ir is Moloshin Chayin. Second of all, Rashi says the next pasuk continues, by Yiken es chelkas hasada. The pasuk says he bought a plot of land for his tent, which eventually became the place where Yosef was buried. But the word by Yiken is also related to the word kicking. So he set up something, he set up an improvement for them. So Shmuel says he set up for them marketplaces. Rav Yechanan says he set up for them bathhouses. Rav Yaakov Emden points out, by the way, these are two of these three things are the same things, which were in the conversation before. Rav Yehuda had been praising the Romans for setting up, and Rav Shimon had criticized them that they're only doing it for their own selfish purposes. And the third one we said was bridges, which Rav Shimon had said they're doing only to collect tolls. So Rav Yaakov Emden says, therefore, what it is really Yaakov is sort of like pre-inventing all these things this way. Hundreds of years later, or thousands of years later, when the Romans come and claim, as they do in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, and as Rabbi Yehuda was doing before, that look, we're saying, you know, look how great they're doing, that they invented all, that they're making all these things, so we can tell them, you know what, Yaakov is far ahead of you. He already set up marketplaces and bathhouses in Shechem, and coins which you're going to use to collect tolls for the bridges. So that way, like, the Romans don't even have a claim to originality for having invented these things, because Yaakov already did. Anyway, so the same thing. So we see.
We knew that. I mean, before the Romans, so did the Persians, so did the.
Well, fine, right. But the point is, in other words, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that we see from that it goes all the way back to Yaakov. You know, it goes like this. In other words, in a certain sense, Hashem can tell the Romans, not only is it true that you did all these things for your own selfish purposes, but don't even think that you, compared to the Jewish people, are original with these things, because you should realize that Yaakov, you know, already invented these things long before you guys came along. Anyway, so now we're saying, okay, so Yaakov did that to improve Shechem. Omar, so Rav Shimon says to himself, he wants to do the same thing. He wants to do something to improve the city where he's in now, which is the city of Tveria. So Omar, he asks, Ikam Milsa Debori Vatakoni, is there anything here in town that needs to be corrected, which I'll take care of? Omrulay, so they said, yes. Ika Duchta De Ispe Sophic Turma, there's a certain place here in town where there's Sophic Turma. We're not sure. Bodies were buried over there, but we're not sure exactly where. The Islo, Syro, La Koinim, La Kofi, and it's troublesome for the Koinim to have to walk around that area because, of course, they can't become Tarim Ves. Omar, so now the question becomes, okay, so you have, this is the place where the Suffolk tumor, because there might be bodies buried over there. The question is that, if we have reason to think that it's a permanent beis hakaveres, then there's nothing we can do about it. We're not allowed to move the bodies. We're not allowed to do anything. So then the Kohanim are just going to have to continue walking around it. So first of all, let's find out if it's always been a cemetery or if maybe it's just one of these places where it may happen. It may happen to be that maybe they buried a couple of bodies here just ad hoc. So Omar, sort of Shimon asks, is there anybody who knows whether this place at one time had a chazaka being tahor? So in other words, then we could say that maybe it's only that they did a couple of burials just because, you know, because they had no other space, or it was Erev Shabbos and they had to do it quickly or whatever, but not that it's a permanent beis hakaveres, which in that case we wouldn't be able to move it. So a certain old person tells him, yes, can kitzit ben zakai turma se turma. In this same area, Ben Zakkai, which is Rav Yechanan Ben Zakkai, and Rashi says Rav Yechanan Ben Zakkai himself was a Kohen, he planted and uprooted over there plants of turmasin, which are kind of beans of turma. So first of all, we see therefore that Rav Yechanan Ben Zakkai, Rashi says, was himself a Kohen, but obviously therefore the place must have been Tahor at some point, otherwise Rav Yechanan couldn't have gone there. Second of all, we're saying that he planted and picked produce of truma in that area, and truma, of course, has to stay tahor. So therefore, that shows that, yes, there was a time within living memory where there was a time, not so long ago, maybe not within living memory, but at least where we know that, yes, this place was tahor. So therefore, now we have reason to say, okay, it was never made a permanent beis hakaveres in the first place. Okay. So, obad ihu nami hochi. So we're saying that Rav Yechanan Ben Zakkai had planted and uprooted beans of turma over there. So Rav Shimon does something similar with beans of turma. What he does is, Rashi described, what he did is he took these bean plants of turma and was throwing them around in that area. A nest happened wherever there were mason buried in that area, then they would start floating to the top, they would start floating up in the ground, and now, whether they're above ground now, or even if they're below ground, but still they move the dirt, so now you have places that you can mark, okay, these are the, this and this are the places of the Kvarim, and the rest of the area is Tahor. So that way he was able to be Matahar most of that area, and there was just a small area now where you have the actual Kvarim. So Rashi describes it with a nest. Tosca says it wasn't necessarily so much of a nest. It was more along the lines of that wherever bodies are buried, the ground is going to be softer over there because the fact that the ground was previously dug up means that now it's going to be softer than the other ground that was not. So therefore, what he did was he was planting over there. He was planting the bean plants over there, and wherever the ground is softer and the plants go into the ground easier. In fact, the article says like he's just taking the plants and just like trying to stick them into the ground in different places, and wherever they go in easily, it shows there's a caver over there because that's why the ground is soft, because it had previously been dug up. Any place where it wouldn't go in as easily, he realized it's not a caver. So that's how he did it. So that was the favor he did for the city. The Rebbe talked about this in Sichas a number of times, but first of all, we see from this the tremendous Avas Yisrael that Rav Shimon had, that the first thing he does after he gets out of the cave is to do something good for his fellow Jews. And there was one particular time in Sichas in Nunalek where the Rebbe talked about that it's even more, when you get down to it, what are we saying? That the Kohanim might become Tomei from that area, and then if they eat Truma, then they would be eating Truma. If Truma is grown over there, it would be Truma, which is Tomei. We learn in a few places in Shas that Hashem protects Tzadikim from eating food, which is Osir. So therefore, in other words, any Kohen who might conceivably eat Truma that grew in this area is obviously a Kohen who's not particularly on a high level, who's not on a high enough level to be a tzaddik, that Hashem would protect him from eating such food. And nevertheless, Rav Shimon is still doing something good, even for such people who are not on the high level where they should be.
So what made him change his position radically from condemning the people because they didn't learn Torah, instead they were working, to
that's
forgiveness.
That's what the extra year in the cave accomplished. That's what we said before, that when they came out after the 12 years, he couldn't stand it. But then after 1 year, then he realizes that, no, that's how the world works, and that's you have to tolerate that there are other people that way. So once he learned that lesson during that last year in the cave. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. Amar Ahu Sava, a certain old man says to, not necessarily the same old man who had told him about Ben Zakkai, but a certain old man says very critically, look what's going on over here. Ben Yochai has now been metaher a cemetery. What's going on over here? You have this area that was suspected of being a cemetery. We actually found there were bodies buried over there because your experiment over here with the termistin showed that there are bodies buried. How can you be metaher this area? Amalei, instead of Shimon, answers him, Ilmalei loy ha yisei manu, listen, like this. If you hadn't been with us in the first place when we decided, in other words, the Gemara is taking it for granted that Reb Shimon, even though we're saying he came up with the idea, he didn't just do it on his own. He didn't just do it unilaterally. He first checked with the other Chachamim, with the other local Chachamim, and they voted on the question, can we do this? Given that we have evidence that at one time this place was not a Beis HaKvaris, that Ben Zakkai had been there and had planted Turmas and Turma, can we use that as a basis for clarifying which areas are and aren't Tahar? So that obviously the Chachamim of that area must have sat there and voted and thought about it and voted on it. So Reb Shimon says, if you hadn't been there, or even if you had been there at the time, but you didn't decide, you didn't join the vote with us, then fine, you'd be saying validly, you weren't there or you didn't participate in the vote. So now you have the right to question, you know what, are we doing the right thing? But now, now you were with us over there when we sat down and discussed it. You actually voted, and you actually agreed to be part of the vote. You agreed that you, whether he voted in favor of it, fine, maybe not, but you agreed to be part of that process of making this decision. So now, how can you go and question it publicly like that? People are going to say, like, that it's very disrespectful for a chachamim to act like that to each other. People are going to say, Zonos mefarkas et zuasu. Even Zonos beautify each other, they comb each other's hair or whatever in order to make each other look nice. Even though they have professional rivalry between them, each one wants to attract customers herself, but nevertheless they still help out each other to a certain extent. I'll get like kind of you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. So like, you know, I'll help you with your hair this time, you'll help me with my hair next time. How much more so should it be with Tamar Chachamim that they should treat each other with that they should treat each other with avat yisrael and with respect, and that you're not going to publicly go and argue with me after you were already part of that group of Chachamim where we voted on the thing. So in other words, the idea is given that you yourself previously agreed at least that this is a valid thing to try because you were part of the process of trying it. So now when you're all of a sudden making fun and saying then people are going to think that, look at that, Tamar Chachamim don't argue with each other l'shem shemayim. They're just dumb, you know, it's private grudges and there's petty grudges and rivalries and things like that between Chachamim. If even Zonos know how to do different, then you should also. Sam Sofer learns actually the other way around. He says that the people are going to think the only reason you agreed with me in the first place is because like the way Zonos agree with each other. But now all of a sudden you're showing that there's really a reason to argue, but kind of it's too late. In other words, the point is time to do that would have been before when we were sitting down and starting to have this discussion in halacha. Should we do that or not? That would be the time to raise your objections, not now. So Reb Shimon put his eyes on this person and he passed away for opposing Reb Shimon like that. By the way, there are places, we've learned before that Tosfos wants to say elsewhere that the word Hahusava in the Gemara refers often to Eliyahu HaNavi. Obviously over here that doesn't work because we're saying that Reb Shimon caused him to pass away. Anyway, continuing the Gemara, Nafik L'Shukra, Reb Shimon then went out to the marketplace, Chazir Yehuda ben Gerim, and he saw Yehuda ben Gerim walking around. Omar said, Reb Shimon said, I'm dying, yesh lo zeba olam. Look at this, what is this guy? This guy is still in the world after all this time. This guy who caused all the trouble in the first place by having loose lips and telling over what I had said, which got me in trouble. Nothing by Eno, so Reb Shimon put his eyes on him, and made him into a pile of bones. Now, Tosfos on the previous Omud says, that can't be right. Tosfos brings from Gemara in Moed Cotton that Yehuda ben Gerim was actually a distinguished Talmud Chacham. So in that case, it's not right to use the expression on him, Nasid Gal Shalat Somos, which is a very derogatory expression, like all that's left is a pile of bones, as if like his flesh long since rotted away. Rather, Tosfos says the correct Gilsa over here should be Noch Nafshe, like with the previous one, that just he passed away. On the other hand, Ben Yehoyada defends what we have over here, and also Gal Shalat Somos. He says basically, Reb Shimon needed it as an alibi, because what's going to happen? Yehuda ben Gerim is now dead over there. If his body was still in good shape, the Romans are going to come start sniffing around. How did this guy die? Oh, well, Reb Shimon was in the area, and they're going to say, oh, well, Reb Shimon must have done it because he has it against Yehuda ben Gerim for leaking the secret. Like this one, it's a pile of bones. It looks like he died a long time ago. So they're going to start asking around who killed this guy. I don't know. It must have been quite some time ago, given the shape of the bones. Well, quite some time ago, Reb Shimon wasn't around because he only came here recently. So that way, like Reb Shimon sort of has an alibi in case the government starts snooping around.
I thought that we said previously that Eliyahu Navi came to the cave and said, "Safe now to come out. There's nothing to fear." What would he fear then?
Well, because even so, if Yehuda ben Gerim is dead, according to Ben Yahyada, I guess we would have to say, but if Yehuda ben Gerim is now found dead and the Romans start snooping around, then the whole old case may be reopened. Or even if they don't reopen the old case, fine, okay, so now at this point what Reb Shimon said is so far in the past, maybe we're not going to worry about it, but why is he going and killing somebody, or why do we have reason to suspect that he may have killed somebody who did us a favor by telling something that eventually reached our ears? So therefore, in other words, according to that, Reb Shimon would prefer to avoid the whole issue. So like this, if Yehuda ben Gerim looks like a pile of bones, then he has more of an alibi otherwise. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. The Mishnah says, Gimel dvorim tzorech odom loyma b'tech beisei erev Shabbos in chashecha. There are three things that a person has to say in his house erev Shabbos shortly before it gets dark. He has to ask, Isartem, did you take maaser from the produce? Now, Rashi points out, you have to do it im chashecha, you have to do it very close to when Shabbos begins, because otherwise, if you do it much earlier in the day, it's not going to do any good. People are going to think that, you know what, there's plenty of time, we're in no hurry, and therefore, they're not going to do it right then and there, and therefore, it may end up not getting done at all. So therefore, you should say it as close as possible to Shabbos, in order that way they actually listen. So you have to ask Isautim, did you take Meister from the produce? Because Rashi points out, what we're talking about is, for example, you have produce that may have been brought into the house earlier in the week, which the halacha is that depending on the circumstances, if it wasn't Gemar Malacha, if it wasn't brought into the front of the house or whatever, then it's not chayav yet in Truma and Meister on a Daraisa level, and you're actually allowed to eat a snack from it. However, Shabbos is one of the six things that changes the status of that produce, and makes it that now you can't eat a snack from it anymore. So therefore, it's very important to make sure before Shabbos that Meister has been taken. Otherwise, you're not going to be able, otherwise, the same fruit that you've been eating from throughout the week, that you've been snacking on throughout the week, now on Shabbos, you're not going to be allowed to. The second thing he has to ask, Eiravdim, did you make the Eruv? And we're going to see in the Gemara whether we're talking about Eruv Chaseiros or Eruv Tchumen. We have to remember, nowadays, it's more common, and by the way, it's right before Pesach, so it's a good time to remember. Usually, nowadays, we just make one Eruv Chaseiros for the whole year. But that's because nowadays, we have matzah that will last a considerable amount of time. But in the old days, they didn't have that, and therefore, the usual way of doing things was that they would make the Eruv Chaseiros individually every week with new food. And if you don't make the Eruv Chaseiros, then you have a problem. You can't carry in the chatzah on Shabbos. So therefore, that's the second thing that you have to remind the people in the household is to do that before Shabbos to make the Erev Chaseres. And the third thing, have liquor on there, you tell them, light the Shabbos candles. Now, why are you doing the first two as a question and the third as a statement? Rashi says, this is the first two. You can't be sure whether they did them or not. You can't. You don't see necessarily the Erev food. You don't see you don't see the mic they're set aside necessarily. But the candle, you can clearly see whether it's lit or not. So therefore, you tell them, light the candles. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Sofik chashecha, sofik ena chashecha. If it's a sofik, whether it's Shabbos yet or not, which is Beinah Shmoshes, which we're going to learn in the Gemara on Omer Beis, we're going to start talking about the actual definition of Beinah Shmoshes. So during that time of Beinah Shmoshes, when it's a sofik, whether Shabbos has begun yet, ein ma'asrin et avadai, you're not allowed to, during that time, take ma'aser from produce that definitely requires ma'aser to be taken from it. You have a zera d'rabbanan that you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos because it's like fixing up, sort of. It's like on Shabbos, there's a malacha d'araita of fixing kalim, of course. D'rabbanan was saying that, that fixing the food and making it edible is similar to that, and therefore the Chacham said you're not allowed to take ma'aser on Shabbos. So like this, when you have produce, which is definitely tevel, then you're not allowed to do that Beinah Shmoshes either, because the Chachamim imposed that zera even during Beinah Shmoshes, because the topic whether it's Shabbos yet. The Ein Makbilinus HaKelim, you can't tovel Kelim where you're toveling them because they're Tomei, and you want to be able to use them on Shabbos, because again, toveling Kelim on Shabbos is also something also Dirabbanan, because again, for the same reason, it's like you're fixing the Keli. Before the Keli was unusable, and now it's usable. So it's like fixing it. You have a bit of discussion among Achronim, by the way, whether that also applies to dipping Kelim in the mikveh, like we do nowadays when we buy them from a goy. Okay, anyway. The Ein Mavlikin, it's a Neiris, and you can't light the Shabbos candle during that time, Beinah Shmoshes, because again, it may already be Shabbos. What it does say in Shulchan Aruch is if you didn't have a chance to light the candles before that, and like this, you're not going to have any light at all, you are allowed to, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you are allowed to ask the goy during Beinah Shmoshes to light them for you. Nowadays, it's a bit of a moot point. We usually have plenty of other light in our house. We don't need to ask the goy to light it for us. But anyway, Avo Ma'asrin Esa Dmai, but during Beinah Shmoshes, you would be allowed to take ma'aser from Dmai, because since the whole concept of Dmai is only Dirabbanan, because most Amei Ha'aretz do take Ma'aser, and you're only taking this Ma'aser because to be on the safe side, in case this Amei Ha'aretz is one of those ones you don't. So therefore, the Chacham allow you to do it. Therefore, the Chacham allow you to do it even Beinah Shmoshes, because again, the whole thing of taking Ma'aser is during Shabbos is only Dirabbanan. Ma'arvin, you're able to make an Eruv, and the Gemara is going to ask soon. We just said before that you said you have to make the Eruv before Hashecha, so what's going on? So we'll see in the Gemara two different types of Eruv. The Tonin is a Chanin, and also during Beinah Shmoshes, you're allowed to do Hatmona of hot food, which is Hatmona as you insulate the food. You wrap it up, or you put it inside something that will retain the heat. The details of Hatmona we're going to talk about in the fourth parak of Amasechta, beginning on Daf Mem Zayin. So you have all kinds of dinim, what you're allowed to use for Atmana, what you're not, what details of when you're allowed to take the food out and when not, whatever, all that will be the subject of the fourth parak. But the Mishnah is saying over here that you're allowed to do that Atmana Beinah Shmoshes. Because even though it's a suffix, whether it's Shabbos yet, the various issues you have with Atmana are Dirabbanan, and therefore the Chachamim allow you to do it Beinah Shmoshes. Okay. So the Gemara thought so. Now, you're not allowed, now, the point is, none of those things that you're allowed to do after is definitely Shabbos. Because again, even though they're all also Dirabbanan, nevertheless, once it's definitely Shabbos, then they are indeed also Dirabbanan. Okay. So, Gemara starts, Menachani Nim. Where do we know this, that you have to say these, that you have to tell your family to do these things before Shabbos? Amr B'Shalom, maybe. Amr Kra, because you have a process that says, V'yadasa Fisholem Ahalacha, you will know that there is peace in your house, or for Kadka Navka, you will give instruction to your household, the Loi Sechta, and you will not sin. So one way of looking at it is that, in other words, the Gemara is focusing on specifically the one about lighting Shabbos candles. That without Shabbos candles, as we've talked about here and there throughout the parak, Shabbos candles bring peace in bring bring Shabbos candles bring peace in the household because, like this, you see where you're going, you're able to eat your food, you're not tripping over things or whatever. So therefore, it brings shalom to the world. So therefore, you have to make sure that there's shalom in your household, and that way, and you accomplish that by saying the light Shabbos candles. According to that way of looking at it, which Marshall says, maybe what Rashi holds, because Rashi doesn't actually explain anything on this at all, then the Gemara is not looking for a source that you have to say, take Meister and do the Eruv, because those are more obvious. The question is how we know that it's important to make sure that Shabbos candles are lit. The Rosh and a couple of other Rishonim say that no, actually all three of them are hinted at in this passage. Shalom Ahalacha is the candle, again, for Shalom Bayit, or for Kadka Navcha, you should give instructions to your household, refers to the Eruv HaSeres, which makes that you're able to accomplish things in your household that you otherwise wouldn't be able to, like carrying out in the Chaser. And the Loi Sechta, you shouldn't sin, refers to, the word Sechta also means being missing, refers to Meiser, because it means, in other words, make sure to take Meiser so you're not lacking food. Because like we learned before in the Gemara, that as a punishment for not taking Meiser, food is lacking in the world. There ends up being a drought and a famine and whatever. So make sure that doesn't happen. Make sure that Meiser is taken properly. By the way, there's a post can say, we nowadays don't necessarily do those things. You don't hear people asking these questions in their household before Shabbos. The reason is because they most of them don't apply. The Isautim, we live in Chutzlaris, we're generally not taking Meiser from our clothes. And even if it comes to taking challah, the halacha is that in chutzlaret, in case you didn't take challah before Shabbos, you're allowed to still eat from the bread on Shabbos, and you just set aside a piece out of which you will take out challah on Motzei Shabbos. So therefore, it's not as critical as it would be, as it was in Eretz Yisrael, to make sure that challah is taken from the dough before Shabbos. And as far as eravtem, again, we usually make our eruv kaseros for the whole year, so therefore, you don't necessarily have that. Okay. Amar Rav Bar Rav Huna, Afagav the Amar Rabbanon Shloisha Dvarim Tzarech Adam Loima Bechola, even though the Chachamim are saying that you have to say these three things, and it sounds like you're saying you need to say them forcefully, nevertheless, Tzarech Lemen Minu B'ni Chusa, you have to say them gently. The Hechid will come Linu Mine, that way the people will accept it and listen to him. If he yells at them, then they're not going to want to listen. And then it could be the other way around also. If he yells at them to do it, they may be. So it could actually lead to Chilul Shabbos. Because it could happen, for example, that for whatever reason, they don't get there at that moment. Later on, they start getting nervous, and it's already Shabbos, it's already dark, and they say to themselves, wait a second, we didn't take Meiser, we didn't light the candles or whatever, but he's going to be very angry if he sees that it wasn't done. Therefore, let's go do it, even on Shabbos, even though it means breaking Shabbos. And therefore, you don't want that. Amar of Ashi, Anola, Shmiel, and Adad, Rav Bar Rav Huna. So Rav Ashi says, actually, I didn't hear of this that Rav Bar Rav Huna says, the Kiyamti Mitzvara, but I did it anyway because logic dictates that that's the best way to do it, is to say it gently, and that way they'll listen, and that way they'll actually do it. Okay. So Gemara points out, now we seem to be having a contradiction in our Mishnah. You're saying there are three things a person has to say in his household Erev Shabbos before it gets dark, implying im chashecha ein, before it starts getting dark, sapek chashecha, sapek ene chashecha loy. But once you're already in the period of Bein HaShemoshes, and already it's a sapek, whether it's daytime or nighttime, then it's too late to do any of these things. Then, on the other hand, you have, the Mishnah had continued, that during Bein HaShemoshes, you're still allowed to put down an Eruv. So what is it? Does the Eruv have to be done before it's sapek, whether it's Shabbos yet? Or can it even be done during that time of Bein HaShemoshes? So the Gemara gives over here, the Gemara interjects over here with a simon. This is a bit of an unusual simon. Marshar explains, usually a simon in the Gemara is for things that are going to be right after it. You have many places in Shas where you have a simon, and you have afterwards, it can be a simon for the chachamim who says it's a thing, a simon for the statements that are said or whatever. Here, very unusually, Marshar explains that we have here a simon for all the statements of the Abba, in the name of Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi, in the name of Rab, that we're going to have in our Masechta. Scattered throughout our Masechta, we have these five statements. And the first one is the Gufya, which refers to when we said over here that we started with the question, how Gufa Kasha. Okay, the first one, Amar Baba, Amar Chiba Ashi Amar Rav, Loi Kasha, there's no contradiction between the two parts of our Mishnah. Again, we have one part that seems to be saying that you have to do the Erech Haseris before Shabbos begins, before Bein HaShemashos, and the other one implying that you could do it even after Bein HaShemashos, because Kan Be'eruv Haseris, Kan Be'eruv Tchumen, Kan Be'eruv Haseris. One is talking about Erev Tchumen, one is talking about Erev Chaseiris. The idea being, Erev Tchumen, the concept of Tchum does exist on a Daraisa level. Therefore, the Chachamim don't want that you're going to be putting down an Erev Tchumen Bein HaShemashos. Because, again, even though Bein HaShemashos is only a topic, whether it's daytime or not, the Chachamim don't want you to be doing that at a time when it might be Shabbos. Because Tchumen itself do exist on a Daraisa level. On the other hand, Eruv Chaseiris is more of a Chumrah. The whole concept of Eruv Chaseiris is, from beginning to end, is a Takana Derabanan. Therefore, the Chacham don't mind so much if you do it Bein HaShemashos during the time when Sopik Yom, Sopik Laila. Okay. The Omar Rava, also Rava says another din, Omru L'Shnayim Seva Arev Aleinu, suppose that two people say to one person, go make an Eruv for us. Now, one thing you have, one din, let's say we're talking about Eruv Tchumen. One din you have as far as the Eruv, actually it applies really to one thing you have as far as the Eruv, the halacha is the Eruv food has to still exist when Shabbos begins. If you put down the Eruv and the food end up getting eaten or destroyed or whatever before Shabbos began, then the Eruv's no good. So Omru L'Shnayim Seva Arev Aleinu. Suppose that two people tell a person, go make an Eruv for us. L'Echad Eruv Olav Ne'Be'od Yom, L'Echad Eruv Olav Ben HaShemashos. So he puts down two Eruvin. One he puts down for Reuven, and he does it while it's still daylight, before Ben HaShemashos. And the other one he puts down, the other one he puts down Ben HaShemashos. Now what happened is, Zesh Erev Olav Ne'Be'od Yom Nechol Erev Ben HaShemashos. Suppose then that what happens is Reuven's food ends up getting eaten Ben HaShemashos. And Zesh Erev Olav Ben HaShemashos Nechol Erev Ben HaShemashos. The other one whose Erev was put down after, during Ben HaShemashos, the food ended up getting eaten after Shabbos began, or actually it doesn't even really matter whether it got eaten or not, Tosfos says. Either way, the point is that the point is that it still existed throughout all Bein HaShemashos. So the din is, Rava says, Shneim Kona Eruv. The din is, both of them, their Eruv is considered to be valid. Now that's the Gemara is asking, why? Why should both Eruv be valid? Monopshah. Shouldn't it be, however you look at it, there should be a problem over here. E Bein HaShemashos Yemamahu, if you tell me that Bein HaShemashos is considered part of the daytime hours, if you say that Bein HaShemashos is part of the daytime, and therefore the first one that he put down, and therefore that the second one is also valid, because he put it down before Shabbos really began, then good, Basra Litni, the second one's Eruv should take effect. Kamaloi Litni, but the first one should not, because the Eruv was eaten Bein HaShemashos, so when Shabbos actually began, the food didn't exist anymore. So why should the first one be a good Eruv? The E Bein HaShemashos Leil Yehu, if you say that Bein HaShemashos is already considered part of the nighttime, then it should be the other way around. Kamalitni Basra Loi Litni. Then it should be the other way around. The first one should take effect because, okay, the food still existed there, Bein HaShemashos, and we're assuming that Bein HaShemashos is considered a full-fledged part of Shabbos, but then the second one should be no good because you put it down on Shabbos, and we just said, the Chacham said you can't put an Eruv down on Shabbos. The answer is Bein HaShemashos Seikahu. The answer is the whole concept, what Bein HaShemashos is a suffix. When it comes to a suffix derabanan, we can be lenient even in a case like this where the two spakers, where the two sides of the suffix kind of contradict each other. Because for one purpose you're saying that it's considered part of Shabbos. For the other part that you're saying it's not considered part of Shabbos. Nevertheless, in this kind of case, the Chachamim allow you to do those two contradictory kulas. Now, Rashi had said that we're talking about over here Eidu Chumin. Tosfos says not necessarily, because actually, if you put down if you put down the Eidu Chumin Bein Hashemoshes, then it is then. So anyway, Tosfos brings Tosfos discusses the question that not necessarily are we talking about over here Eidu Chumin. Because the Dieved, you put down the Eruv Tchumen during Bein HaShemoshes, it is kosher. But, okay, so Tosfos says, actually, what we're talking about over here is that, but still, Tosfos says, if it's eaten Bein HaShemoshes, it wouldn't necessarily be good with an Eruv Tchumen. So Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that actually we're talking about over here Eruv Chatzeres. So you have, again, what they told one person, make an Eruv Chatzeres for us, and for us. And another person says, okay, make for us. So that's then you'd have the din that we're saying over here, that if one of them was done during Bein HaShemoshes, and the other one was done Bein HaShemoshes, and was eaten only later on, then both of their Eruvim are valid. But if we're talking about Eruv Tumen, Tosfos says not necessarily. Okay. The Omar Rava says also like this. We mentioned at the end of the Mishnah about Tumen Hachamim, that you're allowed to insulate a pot of hot food by wrapping it in something warm or putting it inside something warm or whatever. Now, there's two kinds of materials that you could use for Hatmana, which we're going to talk about more extensively in the fourth paragraph. You have what's called Dover Hamosik Hevel, and Dover She'enu Mosik Hevel. You have certain kinds of things that you put the pot in, that you bury the pot inside it, and they actually increase the heat. These are things that themselves give off heat, and therefore they make the pot even hotter than it was before. And then you have things that are called Enu Mosik. Would you mind muting yourself? I'm hearing some back talk over there. Then you have Dover She'enu Mosik Hevel. You have things that don't add heat to the pot. They just preserve the heat that's already there. Now, we're going to learn in the fourth paragraph that you have like this. The whole concept of the surim of Hatmana or Drabbanan, we have over there, it discusses that when it comes to Dover HaMoisif Hevel, when it comes to something that adds heat to the pot, the din is you're not allowed to use that for Hatmana even on Erev Shabbos, even if you did it long before Shabbos began, for reasons that we're going to discuss soon. And on Shabbos itself, you're not allowed to use for the first time anything, even if it's something that doesn't add heat, that only preserves the heat that's now. So now Rava is going to explain the logic behind those things. So for Omar Rava, it's named Ma Omru Ein Kenin the Dover She'enin Moses Hevel Moshech Hashemcha. Why did the Chachamim make Zera that after Shabbos began, you're not allowed to insulate the pot with something that does not add heat? For example, when Rashi says, let's say, to wrap it up in wool or scraps of cloth or whatever, why would that be also after Shabbos began? The reason is Zera Shema Yartiyah. Because the Chachamim made it Zera, because he might heat up the pot again. What happens is, in other words, he might find on Shabbos, when he's getting ready to insulate the pot, he may realize, you know what, the food in here isn't so hot anymore. What good is it going to do to bury it in the wool shearing or whatever, when as it is, it's not hot enough? So he's going to go boil it up again, where, of course, then he's over on the issue of bishul, or if not bishul, maybe, because ain't bishul, acha bishul, maybe, but he's over on other issurim involving cooking. And then, he's going to put it into the insulating material. So to avoid that, the Chachamim said you can't insulate on Shabbos at all. Omalei Abaye Yichochi Ben Hashemoshes Namim Beidah. So Abaya says, if that's the case, shouldn't we make the Gzera, that shouldn't we say the same Gzera applies Bein HaShemoshes as well? After all, Bein HaShemoshes, you're not allowed to cook either. On the lay, so Robert tells him, no problem, because Stam Gzera's Rosh Chodesh. Because when Shabbat, during Bein HaShemoshes, at that time when Shabbat is about to begin, generally speaking, pasta are already hot. So there's no concern that you're all of a sudden going to discover that your pot is not hot enough, and you're going to reboil it, because Bein HaShemoshes, generally speaking, the pots are already hot enough anyway, because you just finished cooking them. So therefore, there's no problem with that. Okay. But Omar Rava says another thing. This name Ma Omru Ein Tumen the Dover HaMoisif Hevel. Why did the Chachamim say the rule that you can't use to insulate the pot, something that adds heat. For example, we have examples later on at the beginning of the fourth parak. We have, for example, gefes, which is the stuff left over from olives after you press them. So you put a bunch of that together, it generates heat, and it heats up the pot. The halacha is, as we're going to learn in the Mishnah and the Gemara over there, that you're not allowed to use such material even before Shabbos. So why not? What's wrong with doing it before Shabbos when you're still allowed to boil up the pot? So why are you not allowed to use material that adds heat even with Odyom, even before Shabbos begins? The reason is Zerashem Yasmin Beremet Shiyesh Bogachelet. We make a Zera because he might use for insulating the pot. He might use ashes which still contain hot coals. Omele Abaye the Yasmin. Abaye says, you. So what's the problem? So what's wrong if he uses ashes that have hot coals in them to insulate his pot? The reason is Zera Shem Yechate B'Gecholim. Yes, Chachamim made a Zera that he might come to stir the coals after Shabbos began, because again, you might have the pot is not completely, suppose you have, you could have a case where you're doing this with food that wasn't completely cooked. You might have food that was not completely cooked, and then you're insulating it in these ashes that contain hot coals in them. And then on Shabbos, you're going to realize, you know what? Actually, I didn't end up cooking the food completely before Shabbos. So let me go and stir up the coals now let me stir up some of the coals now which are in the ashes that this pot is insulated in. And then, of course, he's being mechal Shabbos. So therefore, once the Chachamim made that Zera, then they apply it even if the food was completely cooked. So those are the reasons. The Rif and a number of other Rishonim have a very different Girsa in the Gemara. According to their Girsa, the first part of Rava's statement is referring to Davar HaMoisif Hevel. The question is, Rava starts with the question, why is it you're not allowed to, according to them, the Girsa is the other way around. Rava starts with the question, why is it that you can't use Davar HaMoisif Hevel, something that adds heat? And the reason is Zera Shema Yartiyach, not according to this Zera Shema Yartiyach, is the opposite of what Rashi explains. Rashi is Zera Shema Yartiyach means with Chum made of Zera, because you might find that the pot is too cold, and therefore you're going to boil it up, you're going to reboil it before you continue with the process of insulating it. The Rif and the other Rishonim learn that Zera Shemi Yartiyach means Chum made of Zera, that because you're insulating it in something which adds heat, the pot might start boiling over. The pot might start boiling over, and you're going to uncover it, and then later on you're going to recover it, and then it comes out. And then it comes out that you're doing hatmana with something that's moisif hevel on Shabbos, which is also. And then the question was, so what about Bein HaShemoshes? And the answer is Bein HaShemoshes, already the pots have already boiled and already stopped boiling. So they're not going to still be boiling by Bein HaShemoshes to the extent where they might boil over if you do hatmana, and therefore you're allowed to do that. The Rif looms like that, the Rambam looms like that. Then the second question was, why are you not allowed to use something that's not moisture handle, that doesn't add heat? And why are you not allowed to do that on Shabbos? And the reason is because you might use ashes that contain coals with them, and according to that way of understanding it, ashes that contain coals are not something that's going to add heat. They're only something that preserves the heat. And nevertheless, they're saying that you might stir up whatever coals are left in order to add heat. So that's the Girsa of the Rif and the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim. Okay, but that's the bottom line, is you're not allowed to, the basic rules of Atmana, which again we're going to deal with in more detail in the fourth parak, are you're not allowed to do Atmana with something that adds heat, even if you do it before Shabbos, and you're not allowed to use something that just preserves the heat on Shabbos itself. But as we're saying over here, Bein HaShemoshes, you're allowed to. Okay. Now let's start talking about the definition of Bein HaShemoshes. Turn around, bottom. We learn in a Braisa, Bein HaShemoshes Sofik Min HaYom U Min HaLayla. Bein HaShemoshes is a Sofik, whether it's part of the day or not. It's actually a three-way Sofik. Sofik Min HaYom U Min HaLayla. It's a Sofik where the Bein HaShemoshes is partly part of the day and partly part of the night. or Suffolk Kulin Min HaYom, a Suffolk whether all of it belongs to the day, or Suffolk Kulin Min HaLaila, and a Suffolk whether it all belongs to the night. So you have a three-way Suffolk. Is it partly day, and part of it is the day, and part of it is the night? Is it all of it is the day, or is it all of it is the night? And we're going to see soon in the Gemara why we need three different possibilities. Why isn't it enough? Just to say two possibilities. It could be day, it could be night. But we'll see soon in the Gemara there's going to be a nakamina of saying that they're of saying the third possibility as well. Therefore, matirin oitzu b'chomer shnei yomim. What we do therefore is we give the time of Ben Hashmashas the chumra of both days. So this is where we have the concept, you know, like this. When you get down to it, technically, Shabbos, like every other day of the week, should be exactly 24 hours. It should begin at a certain time, and 24 hours later, it would end. The fact that we don't do that, the fact that we say that Shabbos begins at Shtia and then ends, and Yom Tov, and of course, and Yom Tov and so forth, begin at Shtia and end at Sefer Kechavim, that is based on our Gemara over here, because Bein HaShemoshes is, as we're going to discuss, the time between Shtia and Seis. And that time, there's a suffix, whether it's part of the day or the night, and therefore you have to consider it, therefore, to be machmir, you have to consider that it might be all part of the night, and therefore that it would be also to do malacha during it. Okay. The ezehu bein hashmoshes, what is the definition of bein hashmoshes? Misha tishka hakama, it begins when the sun sets. Now, we have to realize, we're all familiar with the concept of we have, there's the regular Matzoi Shabbos, and then we have the Rabbeinu Tam's Matzoi Shabbos, and actually nowadays, in Rabbeinu Tam's Shitta, actually, he himself holds of his Shitta, even as far as when Shabbos begins. According to Rabbeinu Tam, Shabbos begins much later than we do it nowadays. There were Kehillos in Europe that actually followed Rabbeinu Tam's Shitta as far as the beginning of Shabbos as well. As far as I know, nobody nowadays does that, but you have people, of course, who are machmir with Rabbeinu Tam's Shitta at the end of Shabbos. Basically, the idea is, and we'll discuss it further on in the sugya, is that Rabbeinu Tam holds that Misha Tishka Chama doesn't mean when the sun actually sets, it means when the sun's rays set. In other words, you have the sun sinks below the horizon, but you still have for a while you see the light of it in the sky. Rabbeinu Tam holds that is still considered daytime. As long as there's still sunlight in the sky, it's considered daytime. Only when that light disappears is it then it's considered Misha Tishka Chama. Anyway, where the Gaonim and a number of Rishonim learn differently, the Alter Rebbe and the Vilna Gaon paskin like the Gaonim, that Shtia Tachama means exactly what it sounds like when the sun itself actually sets. Okay. It continues the Braisa. So when the sun sets, Kol Man Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adinin, as long as the face of the east is red, and we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow what the face of the east means. On the surface, it sounds like the east side of the sky, but we'll see in the Gemara what it means. So as long as that side of the sky is red, Ichtis Atachon, and the bottom part of the sky is already becoming dark, the Loi Ichtis Elyon, but the upper part of the sky is not yet becoming dark. So all of that is Bein HaShemoshes. Hichtif HaElyon, the Hishvah HaTachton, once the upper part of the sky also becomes dark and becomes equal in darkness to the bottom part of the sky, Zehu Laila, that is the definition of night. Divrei Rav Yehuda, that's all what Rav Yehuda says, that you have the definition of Bein HaShemoshes is at the beginning of sunset, and when you have the red in the sky, and when you have the upper part of the sky is still light, and the lower part is starting to get dark, and once it becomes all uniformly dark, then it's night. Rav Yehuda Omer, Kadesh Yehalach, that was Rav Yehuda. Rav Nechemya Omer, Kadesh Yehalach, Odeh B'shetishka HaChama Chatsi Mil. Rav Nechemya gives a different definition. The definition is when the amount of time that it takes a person to walk a half a mil after the sun sets is Bein HaShemoshes. A mil we have three different opinions in halacha how long it takes to walk a mil: 18 minutes, 22 and a half minutes, or 24 minutes, all based on different understandings of a Gemara in Pesachim. This is, of course, very negeah right before Pesach, because where we get the concept that dough becomes chometz after 18 minutes is by taking the most stringent of those shiurim of a mil, because the Gemara says that the amount of time it takes to walk a mil is the amount of time that it says the amount of time it takes to walk a mil is the amount of time that it takes for dough to become chametz. So therefore, that's where we get the concept of 18-minute matzah. So the Nechemi says you take half of that, so half of 18 would be 9 minutes. Half of, if you say that a meal is 22 and a half minutes, then half of that would be 11 minutes and a quarter. If you say a meal is 24 minutes, then half of it is 12 minutes. Whatever. Rabbi Nechemia says that once that amount of time has passed, then already it's definitely night. Rabbi Yossi says another opinion. Bein hashmoshes keheref ayin. Bein hashmoshes is like the blink of an eye. Then nichnas v'zeh yotzei. The one day is going out. The one day is coming in. The other day is going out. It's impossible to establish what exact part is day and which part is night. Now, this study is saying, by the way, keherif ayin. The Alter Rebbe has a long discussion of this whole concept and of this whole concept of when is Shkia and when is Bein HaShemoshes and when is Shabbos. In you have, aside from the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, you have in the Siddur, you can find Seder Achnasas Shabbos, where the Alter Rebbe discusses, and a whole pilpul discussing over there the ins and outs of this question of when Bein HaShemoshes is and when nighttime, and when Shkia is and when nighttime is. And the Alter Rebbe, in the course of that, explains that Rabbi Yossi's Kerefayin actually means 2 minutes. But even so, it's a very short amount of time. Okay. So thus far, the Braita. So we have three different definitions of when Bein HaShemoshes begins and ends. You have Rabbi Yehuda's definition that it depends on the appearance of the sky. Rabbi Nechemia's definition that it's a certain amount of time, the time it takes to walk a half a mil after Shkia. And Rabbi Yossi is saying that it's a very short amount of time. Okay. Omamau. Now let's analyze the Braita. We said in the Braith, Matilin Oyse L'Chomer Shnei Yomim. We said that Bein HaShemoshes, we give the Chumrah of both days, meaning we said there's three possibilities. It could be all day. It could be all part of the day. It could be all part of the night. It could be partly part of the day and partly part of the night. But I'm going to ask for my Hilchsa. What halacha is that relevant to? Now, if you're talking about, for example, as far as Shabbos, If you're talking about coming into Shabbos, you just say the whole thing belongs to the night, and therefore that would be the Chumrah. If you're talking about ending Shabbos, you say the whole Bein HaShemoshes belongs to the day, and that would be the Chumrah. Where do you have a Chumrah that comes out of considering Bein HaShemoshes part of the day and part of the night, such that we should be saying that you have that third possibility? Where does that third possibility come into play? It comes into play. It's relevant as far as the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara, namely in the case of a Zog. Now, we know that a person can become a Zog. They can have two emissions, make two emissions of Ziva, make them a Zog. A third one also requires that they bring a korban. You have to have, though, that those re'ias are either all on one day or on adjacent days. You don't have, for example, if let's say he had one re'iyah on Sunday and then nothing on Monday and another re'iyah on Tuesday, they wouldn't combine together. So saying that Bein HaShemoshes can be part of the day, can be considered partially part of the day and partially part of the night, is relevant to this question of a Zav. Kiddushan, as we learn in a Mishnah, in Zavim, Rosh Shnei Yomim Bein HaShemoshes, if a person has a re'iyah on 2 days Bein HaShemoshes, then suffix with Tumah or the carbon. Then he has a suffix whether he's Tomei, and also whether he has to bring a carbon, because you have the various possibilities. If one of them, so let's say he had one of the Re'iyas, let's say, on Sunday Bein HaShemoshes and another one Monday Bein HaShemoshes, so you have possibilities. It could be that the first one is considered to be on Sunday and the second one is considered to be on Tuesday, and then he's not a Zav at all. Or it could be that the first one is considered to be on Sunday and the second one on Monday, or that the first one is on Monday and the second one is also on Monday, or that the first one is on Monday and the second one is on Tuesday, and in all those last few cases, he would be considered a Zav. And on top of that, you also have the possibility, maybe the first one was on partially on Sunday and partially on Monday. The second one was partially on Monday and partially on Tuesday. And then he would have to bring a COVID as well, because he had Re'ias 3 days in a row. So that's the relevance of saying that part of it is the day, and that part of it is the day, and part of it is the night. Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion over here, arguing with Rashi that we're not saying that Tosfos understands Rashi to be saying that you could have on different days, we could consider different amounts, different parts of Bein HaShemoshes to be part of the day or part of the night. Tosfos says that can't be. Whatever it is that you define, whatever you define Bein HaShemoshes as beginning and end, whatever you define, whichever part of Bein HaShemoshes you define as being part of the day, whichever part you define as being part of the night, is going to be uniform from one day to the next. So you can't say that on one day it's going to be that. You can't say, let's say, for example, Bein HaShemoshes lasts half an hour. You can't say that on one day, you can't say that on one day 15 minutes of that is going to be considered part of the day and the other 15 minutes part of the night. And the next day you're going to say that 20 minutes of it is considered the day and 10 minutes is part of the night. Tosfos says you can't do that. It has to be uniform from one day to the next. And in fact, the Pnei Yehoshua says, fine, Rashi might not, right? Rashi doesn't necessarily disagree with that. Tosfos understands Rashi to be saying that. Rashi is not necessarily saying that. But anyway, the point is, in other words, that you may have that this Re'iyah of his, Tosfos says, the suffix the person has may be what parts of Bein HaShemoshes did his Re'iyah take place in. He himself is not sure whether the Re'iyah took place at the beginning of Bein HaShemoshes or during the middle or during the end. And therefore, he winds up with a suffix of whether he's Tomei in the first place, and also whether he has to bring a curse. Okay, so that's the relevance of talking about. That's the relevance of saying that Bein HaShemoshes could be considered not only it can be considered all part of the day or all part of the night, but even this that we're saying that it could be considered that some of it could be part of the day and some of it part of the night. That you have a case where that comes out of Chumra and Halacha as well, namely with this Zog. If you have a suffix, whether you have to bring a carbon, by the way, the din would be bringing the carbon, but we don't eat it. Because in general, we've learned before that you don't eat a chatas ha'oik that was brought for a suffix. Because the suffix, and therefore it might be that it was cholin bazara. Okay.
The concept of Bein HaShemoshes,
yeah,
is directly in opposition to the concept of Yom and Laila.
No.
Yom and Laila, there's
no thing. We're saying there's Yom, there's Laila, and then there's a certain period when we're not sure whether Yom has ended and Laila has begun or not. That's
right.
There's a certain
right, but that's
which we're not sure.
That's for us, for Hashem. There's Yom and there's Laila. There's no Ben
Hashem. That's fine. We're not talking about Hashem. We're talking about us. We're talking about us. When is a person not allowed to do Malacha anymore? So that we said that he's allowed that Bein HaShemoshes, you're not allowed to do malacha. However, we said that Rabbanon allow you to do certain things, Bein HaShemoshes, that are also only the Rabbanon, so we need to know what Bein HaShemoshes is. For us, we have a suffix. You're right. For Hashem, he doesn't have a suffix, but that doesn't help us, the fact that Hashem doesn't have a suffix. We have a suffix.
We have a suffix. Okay, so if we have a suffix, why don't we just say Bein HaShemoshes is like it's Shabbos, and that's it?
That's exactly what we're saying. We do consider it like a Shabbos, but we also need to keep in mind the possibility where it could be that part of the day, that part of that time is considered nighttime, and part of it is considered daytime, which, as we just said, is a possibility with a Zav. So you have that possibility also where, as far as Shabbos, fine, it's easy enough to be machmir. But as far as a zav, we have to consider you have the further possibility that it may be part of it is part of the day and part of it is part of the night, which therefore would be relevant if you have a zav who had your ears, Bein HaShemoshes, and we're not sure which one belongs to the day or which one belongs to the night. All right, let's continue.
What about the nida then? Why don't we say the same about the nida?
Because a nida, well, so in a nida, you don't have quite the same thing, but you do have a similar issue. Yes, it's a nida. Yeah, you do actually have a similar thing with a nida, although not identical. With a nida, it doesn't matter whether her re'iyas are on the same, or with a nida, you don't have, it doesn't matter whether it's on adjacent days or not. Actually, you do as far as the Shemeres Yom Kenegadion, but whatever. But let's say, for example, so yeah, with a nidah, you have, if a woman's period begins Bein HaShemashes, you do actually have a suffix, which day it began. And therefore that creates an issue as far as the 5 days and the 7 days that she needs to count in order before she can go to the mikveh. Yeah, you have to start from the second day to be on the safe side. Yeah. So you have a chumrah with that also. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Ho Gufa Kasha. Now, you seem to have a contradiction within the Braisa itself. Let's go back to Rav Yehuda's opinion in the Braisa. Amrit, you said as follows. Ezehu Bein HaShemashes. You said, when does Bein HaShemashes begin? Mishetishka HaChama, when the sun sets, Kol Zman Shetnei Mizrach Ma'adimin, as long as the eastern side of the sky is red, implying Ha Hichtav HaTachin V'Lai Hichtav HaElyon, implying that once you get to the point where the bottom part of the sky is dark, and the upper part is not dark yet, is Lila. It sounds like at that point it's already night, because at that point you don't have the redness in the sky anymore. Lila, the harder tana, then Rabbi Yehuda continues, Hichseva tachten v'la hichseva elyon bein hashmashes. Then he continues that no, when the top part of the sky is not dark yet, and the bottom part is, then already, then still considered bein hashmashes. So what is it? Is bein hashmashes only as long as the sky still has red in it, or is it even after that, when the bottom part of the sky is dark and gray already? Actually, what you have to do is you have to combine together the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda and read it as one long statement. Read the braisa like this. Ezehu ben hashmashes, mishetishka achama, ben hashmashes begins when the sun sets, Kol Zman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adimin, as long as the sky on the east is red, and the Hichsav HaTachin V'la Hichsav HaElyon Nami Bein HaShemashes, you should know not only when the sky is red, even when the bottom of the sky is getting dark and the top is not yet dark, it's still Bein HaShemashes, Nami Bein HaShemashes, but only when Hichsav HaElyon Hichsav HaTachin Laila, only when the top part of the sky becomes dark, only then is it night. So in other words, it sounds like it's two different definitions, but actually what he's saying is it's all one long definition. That you have, you're right, there are two parts of Bein HaShemashes. One where the eastern sky is red, and one where the sky is, where the bottom part of the sky is dark. That's Rabbah's, that's Rabbah's explanation. Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yosef, on the other hand, says in the name of Rav Yehuda and the name of Shmuel. So apparently, in other words, Shmuel gave two different explanations at different times, or that somebody deduced what Shmuel had said, whatever, from something else. But he learns like this: Hachi Katan. What the Braisa means like this: Misha Tishka Chama calls Mancha Pnei Mizrach Ma'adimin, when the sun sets and the red on the eastern side of the sky, Yun. That part of that time is still considered daylight, actually. Because there's still red in the sky, Rabbi Yosef learns what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that it's actually still considered the daytime for all purposes. So it's not even, you don't even have a suffix yet. Hichsav HaTachin V'la Hichsav HaElyon Bein HaShemashes. When does Bein HaShemashes begin? Only when the top part of the sky is not yet dark and the bottom part is. Then Hichsav HaTachin V'la Hichsav HaElyon, then when the upper part of the sky becomes dark, and looks like the bottom part, then it becomes night. So in other words, according to Rabbah, you only have two stages. You have once the sun sets, Bein HaShemashes begins. Then you have the various changes. First the sky is red, then the sky becomes dark, and during all that time is Bein HaShemashes. And when the sky is completely dark, then it's Lila. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yosef rather, you have that when it's still red is not even part of Bein HaShemashes yet. That's still part of the day. Only when the sky starts becoming dark, when the bottom part becomes dark, then it's Bein HaShemashes. And when the top part becomes dark, then it's nighttime.
So what's the difference between Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda?
The difference between, well, both Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef are explaining Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. The difference between Rabbi Yosef and Rabbah is when the sky is red. When there's red on Pnei Mizrach, which again, so far, we're assuming that Pnei Mizrach means the eastern side of the sky. Tomorrow, Beth Hashem, we'll talk about another possible meaning of it. But right now, we figure we're talking about the eastern side. So as long as it is red, so that's the machlokes between them would be, when that part is red. Rabba would say that that's part of the time which Rabbi Yosef, that's part of the time which Rabbi Yehuda considers to be Bein HaShemoshes. Once the sun has set and you see redness in the sky, Rabbi Yehuda would say, according to Rabba, that's already Bein HaShemoshes. Whereas Rabbi Yosef would say that no, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that time is actually still daylight, is fully daylight, and you still allowed to do malachas, the arayis of the rabbanon or whatever. And as far as the zav, it would be considered that his re'iyah was that day, not potentially the next day. Only when the redness disappears and the bottom part of the sky is getting dark, that, according to Rabbi Yosef, would be the beginning of Bein HaShemoshes.
Why do we talk about the eastern sky? The sun sets on the western part.
We're going to discuss that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. But we'll stop over here. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. But then the Gemara we're going to continue on this whole topic of Bein HaShemoshes, and the Gemara is going to point out that basically what you have is Rabba's Bein HaShemoshes lasts longer than Rabbi Yosef's Bein HaShemoshes. Because again, we have to remember Rabba's Bein HaShemoshes begins already when there's red in the sky and continues all the way until the top part of the sky becomes dark. Whereas according to Rabbi Yosef, it's shorter. It begins only when the bottom part of the sky starts becoming dark and ends when the top part of the sky becomes dark.
Well, they both agree that when the top part of the sky is dark, it's lilac.
That's nighttime, of course, sure. And they both agree that as long as the sun is above the horizon, then it's daytime, sure, of course. But they're arguing about, and remember, this is all within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. They're arguing within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, what does he hold of the time when there's red in the sky, when the eastern side, or the Gemara is going to say later, the western side is red. Is that already part of Bein HaShemoshes also, or is that still considered full daylight? So we'll continue with that topic tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
What time?